Hello and welcome back to Mess Explorers with Xavier and Alan. This week we're heading over to Iran to see a hero. But before we do that, I understand, Alan, you're actually coming from a special piece of hardware this episode, so take it away.
I do say I purchased an up-down desk, which is a sit-down desk from one of Australia's leading manufacturers and suppliers in standing desks. Now, these guys are based out of Melbourne and they ship the product all over Australia. I ended up buying the pheasant wood. It's such a sturdy desk, unrivaled flame stability. It's got 4 memory height control settings. It's got 10-year warranty on the frame. It's got a powerful dual motor lifting mechanism and 150 kilogram lifting capacity. Man, this thing is a beast.
Very nice. Puts my glass little IKEA desk to shame then, I think.
Yeah. And for our fans who are interested in looking at the product, there's an affiliate link in the description below, guys.
Well, very good. I hope it serves you well, and I hope anybody else that goes ahead and gets one enjoys it as thoroughly as you do. And the pheasant wood sounds very appealing. But on that note, let's get on to other appealing things. Tell us about this movie.
So hello, fans, again, and welcome back to Mez Explores. Now, before we take a jailbreak and seek redemption, our podcasts are best enjoyed if you've seen the film prior, as we do contain spoilers. As Save said, we are looking at A Hero, which is a 2021 film written and directed by Agassar Fahadi. Now, the film stars Amir Jadidi, Mohsen Tanabende, Sahar Goldust, and Fratisha Orafia, just to name a few. So without further ado, Save, let's get straight into the film. What did you think?
To be honest, I actually didn't find this film particularly engaging. And maybe it's because I went into it with too high hopes because, you know, it'd been a winner at the Cannes Film Festival and whatnot. It definitely had good bones and it was very well executed, and I think it was a nice film. I just didn't find it sort of had the depth of analysis that I was actually expecting out of it. It felt very surface level to me. In some ways, it actually reminded me of the film Thayan, the Indian one we did, I think, at the start of season 3, in the sort of that simple narrative that he kind of went, this is a person that's done stupid things and it's just them living their life as a result of stupid behaviors. And I don't know, it just didn't really click for me. Maybe I'm being a bit too brutal to it. My girlfriend certainly thinks I am, but that's just how I felt.
Ooh, say, I didn't actually expect this from you. Look, there has been some controversy with these films regarding its origins, and it has been hindered with some court cases. Now, one of Fahadi's students actually claims he stole the idea, and she's actually made a documentary about this man in Shiraz who actually becomes famous and handed a bag of cash that he found on leave, you know, from the prison. And so, you know, like, without taking that into consideration, I actually found the film pretty interesting, and it had all these layers and aspects that I really enjoyed.
Look, I hadn't actually heard any of the sort of theories about, you know, whether it had actually been sort of misappropriated content or anything like that. So I'm actually not basing it on anything on those grounds. But tell me some of those themes that you sort of got out of it, and we'll dig into that.
Well, for me, you know, I found this a very enchanting moral drama, and I sort of related this to a modern day Iran. The film gives us a very sort of a sharp awareness of the powers that are at work in Iran, Iranian society, and maybe even snippets of class conflict. It's not really in your face, but it's more obscure, or the morality is actually a little bit more obscure. And as the obscureness increases during the narrative, I feel like Fahadi is able to unravel the veil of human behavior in this film.
Mm. See, I think this, and this was sort of what my girlfriend said to me, that I took it at a very black and white level. And it's not that I couldn't see that there was more depth to it, it's just I don't have the tolerance for the depth it was trying to convey as a, you know, how hard done by is Rahim, because I didn't feel that. To me, I took this as a story as, you know, Rahim was a man who had essentially made bad decisions and then had, I guess, abused the goodwill of others. Be that, you know, his family that he had dishonored by getting up in debt, his brother-in-law that he had essentially taken the money from and then not repaid. And then he had this sort of grand expectation that everyone would still continue to help him get out of prison and repay his debts. And that it was all about him. And it was a very selfish notion. And so I actually didn't really care for the character myself. I was personally of the opinion, much like his brother-in-law, that he can stay and rot in prison until he's paid off his debt. That was the angle I took it from, because I felt him to be a very self-centered and self-serving character. And that's probably why I didn't really care so much for the narrative in this film or feel any of this sort of moral equivocation in it, because it did feel very one-sided, and that he was just a dishonorable man that had betrayed his family at every turn, but still expected the world to bend over backwards to help him.
Well, this was a question that I was actually going to ask you. You know, even though the film is ironically titled The Hero, Rahim is sort of an anti-hero.
I'd almost even go so far as to say he's more of the villain in some sense. Not as an overt, you know, nasty person, but just by the nature that he's only ever looking out for himself. You know, he's his own hero, but he doesn't care about anyone else really.
Well, you're spot on there, Zay, because it's almost like the gold is, you know, a metaphorical fulcrum for the narrative. You know, it balances, you know, how we see, or like how each character sees where the narrative is going, and it plays a crucial part in unraveling the morality challenged by Rahim.
In what way do you feel like the gold was, you know, sort of this fulcrum providing balance though?
Well, I read this article by Glenn Kenny, and I think he says it best here. The viewer can't be sure of what happens next, and if it's spurred by a genuine crisis of conscience or downheartedness over the overwhelming evidence that's, you know, like, are the plans going to work or not going to work. But Rahim decides to return the handbag rather than cash in his contents, only because the contents is actually not as valuable on this specific day because of the fluctuations in the gold value. So he decides to leverage this position, you know, to strengthen his, I guess, morality, or to strengthen how society sees him, to maybe get his sentence reduced. And then this event, it actually results in this cascading set of weird coincidences. You know, like, we've got the charity gets involved, the prison guard, you know, wants to capitalize on his misfortune, and then you've got, you know, like, the man who's offered him the job start to question his genuinity, and it's almost like things are just falling apart.
But I think it rightly falls apart though, because it's made very plain and obvious in the film that Rahim has been deceptive, that he's told lies, that this isn't the first time he's tried to, you know, essentially pull the wool over someone's eyes. He's lied to his brother-in-law about giving funds, he's lied about how much he's going to get, he's lied about where they've come from. He's a charlatan, he's a liar, he's a cheat, he's a dishonest person. And I think what we see is almost the last vestige of a man attempting to do good when everybody knows there's not a good bone in him. And I think that's what he comes up against, is the people that know better than to trust him. Because even though he may be doing one deed, does that disqualify, you know, a life of bad deeds? And I think that's sort of where it's trying to get at for this film, is, you know, does that one deed outweigh the many bad? And the people that you've betrayed and hurt and that put trust in you and that you've sort of violated that at a very deep level for some of these people. You know, his brother-in-law, you know, for all we know, you know, could be damn near destitute. You know, his business could be on the brink of collapse, being in this much debt. You know, likewise, the dishonor and the issues that plays out for his family and his daughters and, you know, whoever else is involved in this. But Rahim doesn't really seem to care about anyone except himself, and that is very, very clear throughout the entire film.
Look, I think you're spot on here, Zay, and I think that is one way of looking at it, because we don't know what his brother-in-law has gone through. I think there's moments in the film where they explain that, you know, his daughter's wedding had to be called off or was in question because he couldn't pay, you know, like, the amount that he spent the dowry.
Yeah.
And as I was watching this film, I almost wondered if it was the brother-in-law who was making the phone calls, or if it was his daughter making the phone calls to the prison and sort of like catching him out here and there. Because, you know what I mean? Like, I think that point is left uncertain. And I think that's one of the beauty of this film, where it's, you know, like, yes, you're right, Rahim has done really bad things in the past, but we don't even know under what circumstances. We're led to believe his brother-in-law's interpretation of these events. And I guess the beauty of this film is it explores how this man is just trying to get his life back together. Yes, he's stuffed up. Yes, he's made mistakes. But, you know, like, I think the novelty of his situation, you know, it makes the viewers uncertainty as to, you know, how good the done deed was in the first place. And I think that's what you were trying to say before.
It is. And they do actually make a point in this whereby, from memory, they alluded to the fact that one of the text messages wasn't, in fact, forwarded on by the brother-in-law or his daughter, but that it was actually forwarded from someone else in the prison. And it's also made quite clear the number of people within the prison, you know, his fellow prisoners, actually don't believe him. They distrust him and they think he's a liar and a charlatan, and that he's sort of staged this as well. And I think this sort of reiterates the point that whether he's outside of prison or inside prison, even those who may be dishonorable, they don't even trust him. And so, you know, on a level playing field, he's still sort of painted as the villain no matter where he goes. But the flip side of that is that even when he's allowed out of prison, you know, he has these sort of his visitation days and whatnot. He goes and, you know, assaults people on the street. He bashes them in their own shops. And, you know, this, you could argue on the one hand, is the actions of a desperate man, but it's also the actions of a man who is so self-centered and egotistical that he wants himself out of prison for his own personal gains, irrespective of what he deserves in terms of, you know, punishment or settlement or whatnot, and irrespective of how it's impacted anybody else's life. Now, you know, the amount of money that he owes to his brother-in-law is not insignificant. As you say, it impacted the dower of his daughter and whatnot. But Rahim is of this, you know, opinion that, oh, well, he should just forget it. Like, who cares? And that really speaks to his attitude.
Yeah, and you're spot on. And I think the brilliance of, you know, Jadidi's performance isn't in his soft likability, but I think it's in the character's performance itself. You know, it's how Rahim sort of leans into the performance, into the character. You know, he pushes with it, he plays with it. You know, he takes the tailspin of bad decisions as he keeps making them worse and worse and worse. And each new character who's introduced in the narrative comes equipped with, you know, their own preconceptions. You know, like, they've got their own judgments, of which, you know, it actually escalates at the same rate as Rahim's. And I think that's just, you know, I really enjoyed that. Look, initially I did find this film very slow and, you know, like, it was a very slow burn or like a slow churn. But as it progresses and as I reflect back on the narrative and what I was trying to say, I was able to sort of appreciate the layering of the film.
Whereas I just went more and more down the path of black and white and just went, no, this guy's just a prick. He deserves to be locked up. Leave him there.
Look, let me ask you this question here. What do you think the title A Hero actually means, and how is that relevant to the character of Rahim?
I've actually wondered this, and to be honest, I think the title is ridiculous.
God, no.
No, to be perfectly honest. Now, on the one hand, it may well be a poor translation. You know, often foreign films will, you know, end up with an English translation that doesn't quite have the same meaning or sort of the nature that's intended in the you know, its own language. I just feel like A Hero is just not appropriate in any way, shape, nor form for this film, because there is no hero in this film. He might think of himself as a hero in a narcissistic sense, but beyond that, a hero just seems like a completely inappropriate word for me, because he has no honor, he has no moral compass, he has no duty that he adheres to, and he has no respect for the people around him. So he doesn't have the defining qualities that I would attribute to a hero. He's more villain than anything. So I really disagree with the title of this film, but I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Look, I'm sort of inclined to initially agree with you with, you know, like, when we spoke about Rahim's innocence. And obviously, you know, he's known for his slippery business practices. He even, you know, wildingly persuades his girlfriend to pose as the other woman, only to get him into more and more strife. But I think the title is meant to be ironic, at least for the first 95% of the film. It's in that last scene where he actually has the decency or the audacity to stand up, not for himself and not have that selfish thought, but to put his, I'm not going to say disabled, but his verbally challenged son's interest at heart. That's what turns that ironic title into a somewhat of a reality. And I think that's what that, you know, it's like the director's way of saying, hey, even though we can be ironic at times, we all have the opportunity to make that decision to become a hero.
I'm glad you touched on this point, because I'm going to maintain my exception of this character. Because this point was brought up to me as, Xavier, you're being far too brutal about this man and his child, and he did a good deed at the end. I call bull.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
The way I interpreted that was, this is a man who's smart enough to at least know how to screw someone over, but not smart enough to manage to execute it properly, as we saw repeatedly. What I saw with his use of his son was that from the outset, he saw it as a way which would serve him. his son was a means to an end. By the very end of it, though, he had come to the realization that it wasn't going to work. People would hate him more, and by him I mean Raheem. People would hate him more, vilify him, think of him as using his son, and that ultimately it would be a poor reflection on him as a father and get him nowhere. So I still took it as a very selfish thing, because at no other point did he stop his son from getting up on the stage and, you know, stumbling through sentences and essentially making a fool of himself through no fault of his own. But Raheem was always willing to put him front and center to leverage it, particularly when money was on the line. But at the point at which money was no longer on the line, the charity had basically told him to piss off and that he was going back to prison. Only then, when he realized it wasn't going to serve any beneficial purpose to him, did he actually stand up for his son. So I maintain that he was an asshole, he was no hero, he was a bad father, and that he was only ever looking after himself. And for me, I don't feel like the film had any irony in it, in the sense that they would use that for the title. I feel almost as though they're trying to genuinely mean that he was a hero in giving back a bag of gold. But I'm sorry, that's still not the defining characteristic of a hero when he's done so many terrible things, both before that and after that.
Right. Well, there you go, listeners. I think, you know, is it two different perspectives on the same narrative experience? And I think that's what I really appreciate about these films. They make you dissect them and actually, you know, explore and debate these meanings. And, you know, like, I guess any film that can do that is relatively a good film.
Oh, absolutely. And this is the thing, like, it wasn't really my type of film, just because I didn't think it was a brilliant execution of it. But that being said, as I said, it was a well-made film. I don't have anything really negative to say about it on that standpoint. And I would far rather see 100 films like this than another one of Taika Waititi's abominations. Like, just be honest, Christ. This was a good film, certainly comparatively.
Look, I knew that slander for Taika Waititi was coming. But speaking of a well-made film, we see moments in this film where the camera sort of glides across, you know, the monument at the very start as he's climbing the ancient site or the scaffolding. You know, it's at least 18 stories high, and the camera just watches him go up and up and up. And I'm pretty sure, like, the shot takes about 2 minutes or something like that.
It is a very long shot.
Yeah, it's a very long shot. And I guess in stylistic terms, it certainly breaks what I'm sort of used to in regards to Western rules of editing and cinematography, because, you know, there's this acclaimed transience to these shots and these non-unified editing, right? It's almost like the director telling us, hey, this is the modern Iranian society and I want you to get used to this because this is how the film is going to be shot subsequently. It's almost like the director's also sort of telling the audience, hey guys, just take a deep breath and readjust your expectations, especially the expectations to do with time. You know, while also staging the audience to the idea of, you know, that this culture has done great things before and what subsequently to expect in the narrative and in the film.
Just in terms of the pacing of this film, it definitely slows down the film right from the outset. It sort of pumps the brakes. And so whatever expectations you're coming to with the audience, it really, really sort of takes the foot off the gas. And it's like, no, you need to settle into this and just absorb it and watch it and be patient with the narrative so you can sort of see how it plays out. And in some ways, it actually reminded me of The Dig, which we did a couple of seasons ago with Ralph Fiennes, where even though and I guess to some extent that film also started off with some sort of, you know, archaeological context, but that film also really took the foot off the gas, and you had these longer sort of protracted shots that allowed you to sort of dig into the characters and just have a look at their tics and just pay attention to how they behave and how they talk and how they carry themselves in the scene, essentially. And it was the same for this film, because, you know, for those very long shots where we sort of follow Raheem as he comes up to the ancient site and then subsequently climbs the scaffolding, he doesn't talk. There's no dialogue. You're just watching a man go from point A to point B. And it sort of gives you that moment to go, well, is he an archaeologist? What's his background? Where's he come from? Where's he going to? Why is he here? Look at this site. This site's amazing. And so it brings up all these questions for the audience without actually answering anything and without assuming anything either. And I like that, because it invites the audience into a film to give their own, or to create their own version of a background for these characters.
Yeah.
And if it rushes through, you never get that.
No.
So speaking of the characters and following them along, tell me what you feel about some of the character development and their execution.
I think the problem with this film is that the characters are so, or the narrative is so mundane and so dragged out that you're hooked onto the actual narrative and not the characters. You know what I mean? Like, you're waiting to figure out what the next plot is. You're waiting to figure out where this film is going. Is he going to be exonerated? Is he going to go back into the film? Is he going to get back together with his girlfriend? Is his family going to forgive him? Like, you're so sort of waiting and waiting and waiting. And then we get this sort of melodramatic sort of climax where, you know, it just all goes to shit.
Yeah, look, I understand what you're saying from that standpoint, because it is a very protracted storyline, but the characters sort of jump around quite a lot in terms of what you see of them. You don't get a huge amount of time with any of the individual characters outside of Rahim, really. But even when you do see him, he's often then jumping around with multiple other characters within the story. So you don't really develop a full arc of anyone's storyline per se. You just get snapshots of their lives so far as how they pertain to Rahim. So I think you're right. You don't get huge character depth out of anyone in this. A lot of it's just implied knowledge, as though, you know, the brother-in-law's been jilted and, you know, out of money and his wife has left him and all these sorts of situations. I do think, though, that the actors on the whole did quite a good performance in this. Now, to be perfectly honest, I don't know any of these actors. I'm not, you know, big on Iranian cinema. I haven't seen a lot of films from there. So I don't really have much basis to say how these people have fared versus other films they may or may not have been in. But I did think they all actually executed their roles very competently.
I'm on the same boat as you, Sabe. I just found out that Farhadi won 2 Oscars for his previous work. So, you know, I'll be interested to actually follow up on his previous films. But with that being said, let's wrap this film up.
Okay, well, tell us your final thoughts then.
I'm going to finish off my final thoughts with a passage by David Ehrlich. And I think he describes it very resolute here, where he sort of says, the story is better described as dilemmas. And those dilemmas unfold with frustration and resolve and steadily and increasingly the ferocity of a cat battling a ball of yarn with itself in it. And it's just sort of wrapping itself around the pole and it gets stretched and everything eventually comes to a standstill when everything gets choked. And I think that's what this film attempts to do. It attempts to unravel a mess, but only to be stricken with more predicament. And I think this film, like I said before, it gives us a very sharp awareness of the powers at work in Iranian society, and particularly on the level of class conflict. And I think it's for these reasons I'm going to give this film a 6.8 out of 10.
Okay, I think that's all valid, very valid points, and, you know, very honest closing remarks in that regard. I think this film was very well made, and I would actually be interested, as like you, to go back and see some of the other works by Farhadi. That said, I still felt like this was, you know, very black and white viewing for me. I didn't feel like it had the depth that I'd been hoping for or been expecting and certainly been looking for. Perhaps I was just looking too hard for meaning in this film, where perhaps there just wasn't sufficient. So, on the whole, it was enjoyable enough film, but didn't hit the mark for me. So I'm actually going to give this film a 6.2.
Oh, okay. Very, very close. Well, guys, if you want to be like me and record off this beautiful wood up-down desk, have a look at our link in the description below. 10-year frame warranty. You can't go wrong. It's a beast of a desk. Amazing quality. Amazing sturdiness. Give it a go. Give them a click and tell them Alan sent you.
Great. Well, on that note, that's all from us, folks. Thanks again for listening. And remember to follow us on your favorite platforms and channels and keep the suggestions coming for films you'd like us to review too. But until then, we'll see you in a fortnight.